7:15 on a rainy Friday morning, November 1st. And I would like to open the Oakland Heart Jeweler talk and text line here. You can call in if you like at 504-260-1870, or you could text in at 504-260-1870. I wouldn't like a campaign speech for either candidate, but what I would like to ask you is, what advice would you give to a voter as it relates to the election on Tuesday about how to pick a candidate? And what I mean by that is not the qualities of Trump or the qualities of Harris or the perceived faults of Trump or the perceived faults of Harris, or real or perceived, however you want to phrase this. But what would you look for in a president? Because I was thinking about this the other day. And I think when people go into the booth, you got to vote for a couple of different things. I think the first thing is, and no matter how I say this, you're going to hear it negatively. You're not going to think that I'm talking about your person. You're going to think I'm talking against your person. And in fact, I'm not talking about either. I'm just saying, in general, what do you look for in a presidential candidate? Does character matter? I think the first thing, whether it's Harris or Trump, that you need to look for is when they tell you or somebody shows you who they are, believe them. Because Trump is not going to change. Harris is not going to change when they get in the White House. They are who they are. And it's not as though you got somebody that showed up from somewhere and you don't know exactly who they are, because I know, you know, they said that Harris had introduced herself to the voters, but she's been vice president for 4 years. So I think everybody pretty well knows. I don't know how, if you're a Trump supporter, you can say you don't know who Harris is, but then you can run her down like you do. Or if you're a Harris supporter, you can say you don't know who Trump is, and then you can run him down, because apparently you do have a feel for who they are. So I guess the first thing I would say is, when somebody shows you who they are, believe them. And don't think that just because they get elected that they're going to change, whether it's Harris or whether it's Trump or whether it's anybody else. The other thing I think you would look for is, who would you trust to run your personal finances? Who would you give access to your 401k, to your checking account, to your day-to-day finances, take financial advice from, etc.? Who would you trust to babysit your kids if you were out of town? Or maybe to be the guardian of your kids if you die? Because if you think about it, that's kind of what's going to happen here. And I saw somebody doing a piece the other day where it's a shame that the people that are in power are older. I don't care if you're 50, 60, 70, and they're making policies that they're not going to really have to deal with, because they'll be dead and gone, and it's the people behind them that will have to deal with the policies. That, of course, is offset by the fact that maybe somebody that's 25 or 30 thinks they know, but they really don't know how the world works. So where does that factor in? Would you vote for somebody that you wouldn't trust to be the guardian of your kids if you were to die? Because it's basically what's going to happen. Presuming everything works as it's supposed to work and the parents die before the children, then the country is going to be left for them. And the people that are in the White House, along with the people that are in the Senate and the House, are going to have a lot to do with what the country looks like. So in essence, they are going to be the guardians of your children in the future, right? So does that enter into it? Does character enter into it? Do you think somebody can do this or that in their past life, either way, and then that doesn't really matter when it comes to running the country or being the role model for the country? And should the president be the role model for the country, or should the president just be the CEO, the CAO, the person that's in charge of the business decisions protecting the country, etc.? I think the other thing is, who is it that can best represent the country? When you're talking to foreign dignitaries, because a lot of this does come down to personal. You know, it's the president of this and the prime minister of that, but when you get right down to it, it's Fred and it's Alice, right? I mean, when they talk to each other, you would think. So who is it that's best able to represent the country? Who is it that's best able to negotiate for the country, to stand strong for the country, to make sure that the other countries know that if they do this, then that's going to happen? To not just maybe be a blunt force object, but also be able to be an iron fist in a velvet glove, as they say, right? So I just want to know, when it comes to choosing a presidential candidate, does any of that enter into your mind at all? Or do you automatically fall into red or blue, conservative, liberal, Republican, Democrat, or just the personalities involved? Never Trump, never Harris. Give me a call or text me, 504-260-1870. I'd like to know. 721 Traffic Now, WWL. 726, Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by Daniel Erspammer, CEO of the Pelican Institute. Talk about Governor Landry's tax plan and tax reformation. Well, I guess reformation would be a good way to put it. Sounds like a Protestant reformation. It's not that serious. Daniel, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
I was talking to Richard Nelson yesterday, and we've been talking about this all week. Special session's going to start next week. Man, I don't know how you get people to understand everything that's going on. Do you have an easy way to explain this or to explain people why what the governor's trying to do is in their best interest?
Yeah, let me take a crack at it. So first, let's say, try to define the problem. The problem is a tax code that's too complicated, that's Byzantine, really. It's outdated. And so what happens is it drives jobs and ultimately our friends, neighbors, and kids and grandkids to other states. So the solution that's being presented is something that is trying to flatten taxes, make them fairer, broader based, and easier to understand and comply with, and ultimately phase out the personal income tax, making us more competitive with the states around us so that we can become the powerhouse of opportunity and economic growth that really we ought to be given our state's assets.
What still needs to be worked out, Daniel? Because you said fairer, and let's face it, not everything's always going to be perfectly fair or advantageous to everybody. That's not the way life works,
sure,
right? It just can't be. But what you have to do is try to think, I guess this is all about balancing the best interest of everybody in the state, the business interest, the personal interest, et cetera, and hoping that you wind up with a system that's more workable and advantageous for the majority of people.
Yeah, that's right. You know, you try to maximize the winners and minimize the losers. And that's where you get, when we talk about fair, what good, fair, what we would call fair tax policy is everyone has some stake in the game, right? If there, that means fewer special treatments, ideally no special treatments. Everyone is on the same playing field and everyone pays the same. So that's why we prefer things like a flat tax. This is while we're in the process of phasing out the personal income tax, instead of having three or four different brackets, we have one flat tax. Everybody pays the same. Same thing on the corporate side. You know, we've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. We've 432 pages of special tax preferences in the corporate tax code. And, you know, if you have one group or one company or one industry paying less over here, that means somebody else has to pay more in order to raise the same amount of revenue to pay for government. So this is about trying to even the playing field. And yes, you know, that there's because of the complexity of the system, there's likely to be some losers in the process while we get this worked out. But by and large, every taxpayer, every individual taxpayer would get a tax cut under this plan, and it gets the process going to really get to something that will drive economic growth.
Daniel, thank you for helping us understand that. I know we'll talk to you more as the special session begins and proceeds, and there's going to be some tweaks and some changes here or there. Complicated
for
stuff.
Sure.
Thanks for trying to help us understand it.
Anytime.
Have a great weekend.
Me.
All right, we'll take a break. We come back. We're going to help you manage your money with Mark Rosa, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union, as we always do. Right now, 7:30 on a button. Time for WWL First News. 7:45, quarter till 8, Friday morning. It's time to manage your money with Mark Rosa, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. If you can, you can go to jeffersonfinancial.org safely. I mean, do this, not while you're driving or anything. You'll see in the middle of the page, manage your money and plan for your future with our financial calculators. And when you click on that, a lot of valuable information there, man, a lot of different calculators. And then we welcome in Mark Rosa. How you doing, Mark?
How are you, sir? Happy Friday to you. It's a little too warm.
Yo,
but Friday, nonetheless.
But it's Friday, and that's the main thing, and it seems like it's been a long week. What are we talking about today, Mark?
Well, on the eve of the election, you know, so much information disseminates about the candidates, and people find themselves squarely on in somebody's camp. And it just seems like it's because their policies are so diametrically opposed. And when it came to taxes, you know, I really focus in on that because I would rather pay less than more. Imagine that. And, you know, you had the tax cuts that Trump installed in 2017. They're expiring in 2025. And the candidates are kind of, you know, it's a big deal. And a lot of people would say, well, Trump lowered taxes too much in 2017. But when Biden got into office, he was a little bit loath to raise those taxes, because imagine that. I'm imagining that a lot of them don't want to pay higher taxes either. And here we come on. So it's obviously a hot potato with respect to the politics of it and who's going to, what they're going to do with things. But the diametrically opposed part to taxes, I mean, it just goes right down the line as far as taxes, Trump's saying he wants to lower taxes even further and bring, let's say, corporate taxes from 21% down to 15%. It was already brought down significantly from the previous rates that were in the 30s. It brought down to 21. And that's such a big deal, because you imagine the zillions of dollars that corporations will earn, and they're taxed at, you know, significantly less. And if it gets to the 15%, that's probably about half of what they used to pay. So as a rate. So, I mean, these are big deals. They're going to cause stimulus in the economy. He wants to cut individual taxes as well. He wants to offer business incentives through the tax code. And all that's going to be stimulative to the economy. And it seems, you know, the GOP or that group likes that more flexibility for the individual. And the Harris camp is saying, no, we're going to cut taxes. We're going to make sure that people making under $400,000 are not going to pay what they currently pay. We'll offer right there. And some more tax incentives for the lower income people. So that's going to be economic incentives, money that's directly paid to them from the government. But we need to raise, how we're going to pay for that in part by raising taxes on people that make over $400,000 and corporations. That, you know, the 21% can't last long. They want to bring that up. And any investment, which is a really killer for investment incentive and people that put their money into investing in companies so the companies can flourish. It's like we need to install a fairly, if Biden had his way, it would be like 40% tax on capital gains. So what a difference in the tax policies, but both of them could be very stimulative to the economy. And that's the way a lot of times the policies are kind of structured, you know, for the talking points. And I guess at the time within both of these, you got some sector specifics talking from a money standpoint. And, Harris's policies would tend to lean more towards favoring the Teslas and the SunPower companies using specific names, and then major pharmaceutical companies, because she wants to do a lot of push towards healthcare. I think they would prefer more government intervention in healthcare than less, and so that might help those companies. You're going to have people who benefit by that. And on Trump's side, the sectors who might benefit most might go to companies like Exxon and the major oil companies, J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank America. I think he'd be friendly to finance. And Lockheed Martin, another company that, you know, is a large company within the economy that might benefit from Trump policies. But what worries me is all of them are stimulative. You can't run, I guess, for politics and say, you know, I'm really going to pull the growth rate of the economy down, and we really need to get this get things in order. And none of my policies are going to be stimulative. They're going to kind of be anti-stimulative, and you can't win elections like that. So I worry about inflation naturally, because I think both of them could, in their own way, reignite the inflation that the Fed is working so hard to contain. And more for the Monday segment, but just this week, the Fed's preferred inflation gauge came out, and it was right as expected at 0.2%. Okay, that's okay, but on an annualized rate, it's at 2.4. And I think they would prefer it to come down a little bit less. And I think we as a group, as Americans, have, you know, we've seen the inflation rate come up, hit a high a couple of years ago, but it's not come down. That's what you were just talking about, insurance rates. Are they ever going to come down? A lot of people are saying, well, the inflation is growing at this very anemic rate, but the focus is on the operative word growing. It keeps adding on. So, you know, to solve that, I've always said, well, you probably need a recession. to have this growth rate become negative and prices really start to pull back. But it's between the inflation, and nobody is talking about the deficit. Some estimates are Trump's tax policies, if he gets what he wants and he does what he wants, it's going to be about a $9 trillion increase in the deficit over 10 years. He's going to add tariffs. I was listening to my boss at UNO, Dr. Lane, talk about the tariffs. The tariffs are expected to bring in about $2.7 trillion over 10 years if installed at a rate that he wants to bring them in. Harris, the cost of the deficit is going to raise it about $6 trillion over 10 years. And both of them are adding to an already ballooned deficit that's growing at about $1 trillion. The interest is about $1 trillion a year. And that's what's worrisome. Somebody commented online, it's like the 24 election, nobody's talking about the deficit. The 28 election, everybody's going to have to be talking about the deficit because it's going to be, you know, who knows, some estimates are as high as close to $50 trillion. And it's just unfathomable number. But it's as far as managing investments, we've seen economic downturns, we've seen recessions before, we've seen elections before. And if people are just minding their investments and understanding what they own, you know, the S&P 500 or sufficiently diversified portfolios should keep you safe through anybody's administration. And it's just to understand, I think that's the biggest key. People, even in 401ks, Tommy, I see people at work that they would be really hard pressed to explain to anybody, including themselves, what exactly do you own in your 401k, and what is it supposed to do, and why did you choose a particular fund? And I think people would be hard pressed. So it's not a bad idea. It is your money, and it's your money when you're trying to retire, and you'd want more than less. So educate yourself on what is in your portfolio. And if you want a high-flying portfolio with a lot of volatility in it, well, elections tend to be accused of introducing a lot of volatility, and you might have more depending on which side of the fence that your investments are on. And if you have a conservative portfolio, you might not see a whole lot of change in what the investments that you've chosen previously, regardless of either candidate. But it's that's the focus of how do you take your investments through an election year where people are so polarized, the economy seems to be so divided, and it adds a lot of uncertainty for people that they're trying to make those choices.
Mark, very interesting information. I know we got a new jobs report. I will talk about that on Monday with you as we take a look at the week ahead on Wall Street with Mark Rosa, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. Thank you, sir. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Tommy.
You bet.
You too, sir.
7:54, 6 till 8, traffic now, WWL.